DW Africa Link. The time in our studios is exactly 6 p.m. Welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Mimi Mefo. Thank you for joining the debate live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We are also coming to you live on our partner radio stations across the continent.
That's indeed correct, Mimi. Coming up on the program, today is International Day for the Eradication of Poverty. We will be hearing from Liberians and Bruneians on what it means to be poor.
Poverty is never and will never be eradicated in the absence of political will. Africa needs men and women who value integrity.
And that is not all. Authorities in Sierra Leone reinforce their position that pregnant girls cannot attend school prior to giving birth.
Some of these girls don't get pregnant because they want to get pregnant. Some are raped by people who they trust, people who they live with at home many a time.
Plus, violence erupts in Barcelona for the third night running.
And these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you. But first, the world news in brief.
DW News.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Britain and the European Union have reached a new deal on the UK's withdrawal from the bloc. EU Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said the deal still needs to be approved by both the UK and the European Parliament. He further stated that he didn't see any need to extend the negotiations.
This is a fair, balanced agreement. It is testament to our commitment to finding solutions. It provides certainty where Brexit creates uncertainty. It protects the rights of our citizens and it protects peace and stability on the island of Ireland.
The new Brexit deal lays out terms on sticking points, including border and customs issues between EU member Ireland and Northern Ireland. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has hailed it as a great new deal and urged the UK Parliament to approve it.
For us in the UK, it means that the UK leaves on October the 31st, and it means that we can take, as a single, a united kingdom, decisions about our future, about our laws, our borders, our money, and how we want to run the UK.
Two main opposition parties in the UK have opposed the deal. The leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, called it an even worse deal than Theresa May's, which was largely rejected. The US Vice President Mike Pence has begun talks in Ankara with President Tayyip Erdogan in an attempt to halt Turkey's offensive in northern Syria. Pence and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo were expected to warn Erdogan that he would face additional economic sanctions if he didn't stop his assault on Kurdish forces. President Trump has been accused of abandoning Kurdish fighters who are Washington's allies in the campaign against the so-called Islamic State. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. The leader of Catalonia's regional government in Spain, Quim Torra, has called for a new independence referendum. He was speaking as the third night of separatist unrest left dozens injured in Barcelona. Thousands have been protesting against the prison sentences handed to nine Catalan separatist leaders earlier this week.
Every forbidden right will have to be exercised again. Every bounded freedom will have to be defended again. If we have been condemned for 100 years for placing ballot boxes to exercise self-determination, the answer is clear. Ballot boxes will be placed again to exercise self-determination.
And a five-nation force set up to fight jihadism in the Sahel region has carried out military operation for the first time in months and made a major seizure of weapons in northern Niger. The so-called G5 Sahel force has been struggling against escalating attacks by armed Islamists. The force was formed in 2015 and began its first operation in 2017, but remains hamstrung by lack of funds, weapons and training. And that's news. My name is Jin Nyingi.
And you're listening to Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Mimi Mebfo. We thank you so much for joining us on our social media platform, DW Africa. I can already see Tutu Desnick and Shian Shah. Keep the comments coming in. We shall be reading them in the course of the program.
Thanks, Mimi. Today is the International Day to Eradicate Poverty. In his annual message, Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of the United Nations, said that extreme poverty is at the heart of the world's efforts to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals and build a future for all.
Guterres also said that success is leaving no one behind and would remain elusive if the world doesn't target the people who are farthest behind first. According to the UN, children are more than twice likely to live in extreme poverty than adults. Our correspondents have been up and about to find out what the day means to ordinary people.
I'm Evelyn Pade in Monrovia, Liberia. It's a country that is rich in natural resources like gold, iron ore, diamonds, timbers, and rubber. Despite such riches, over half of Liberia's 4.5 million people still live in abject poverty. As Liberia joins the world over in celebration of this year's Poverty Eradication Day, most Liberians, including Rachel Grace Redd and Clarence Todd, think there is no need to celebrate such a day for these reasons. A development expert, Luther Tappe, believes Liberia's poverty is due to bad governance.
How can you celebrate World Poverty Eradication Day when you have majority of the citizens living below a dollar per day? You have people that can barely afford a meal on a daily basis. We had a poverty eradication strategy before, during Madam Senik's time. This government came up with a poor agenda. Poor agenda is not working in the interest of the poor at all.
Poverty is never and will never be eradicated in the absence of political will. Africa needs men and women who value integrity, because Africa's number one problem is corruption. So if we leave this political space for dubious character people who do not care about anybody except themselves, where would the redemption come from?
As the world marks the International Day for the Eradication of Poverty, the number of Burundians living on less than a dollar a day is on the rise, especially in rural areas. Despite government's effort to support its people through various projects, Burundi still has a long way to go if it will effectively eradicate poverty. Since 2015, international institutions like the European Union suspended much-needed aid to Burundi, making it difficult for people to make ends meet.
There was a little bit rise of the poverty, most especially the youth, but I think more needs to be done, especially in investing in agriculture and also creating entrepreneurship and also sensitizing the youth. This could be the major factors of stopping poverty.
La pauvreté existe au Burundi.
Poverty exists in Burundi, starting with myself. I am a university graduate but jobless. There is no support from the government for the unemployed. And if you try to start a business, the Burundi Revenue Authority will start taxing you heavily.
In Malawi, a recent World Bank report indicated that a large proportion of people in Malawi are still living below the poverty line of $1.90 per day. This is lower than the average for sub-Saharan Africa, making it the poorest country in the region. Here is what some of the people in the streets of Lilongwe think as far as poverty reduction in Malawi is concerned.
Poverty situation in Malawi is not getting any better. The gap between the poor and the rich, and largely it's because of weak governance systems where we see rampant corruption. So that really accelerates inequalities.
When you go on the ground, you find that everything which is contained in the poverty reduction strategy paper is not necessarily what is happening on the ground. So there is a twist of policies, there is a twist of priorities for this country.
Voices of ordinary Africans talking to our correspondents about poverty levels in their countries. That was Malawi, Burundi, and Liberia. Now, Mimi, we have so many comments, but we should just go through a few of them.
Anibara Kumo Watson says that lack of equality or quality education since independence, coupled with overpopulation, which breeds hopelessness. People are even calling for fresh colonization.
And Edna Chepkurui says other people are busy enjoying our resources. Until we break the chains, nothing will happen. We really love to hear so much and we like the debate on our Facebook page, W Africa, but we shall come back to your comments whenever we can. Another big story in Europe making headlines is that of Spanish and Catalan leaders who are appealing for an end to the violence in Barcelona and other cities after protesters clashed with police for the third night in a row.
Demonstrators want Catalan independence leaders who receive long prison terms to be released. They also want a path to nationhood. Thomas Amta has more on that story.
Once more, thousands took to the streets. And once more, clashes erupted between demonstrators and police. In a televised address, the Spanish Prime Minister tried to calm the situation, appealing directly to Catalonia's pro-independence leader.
I would like to make a special plea to the Catalonian president. He and other members of his government have a political and moral duty to condemn, without any excuses and with maximum clarity and determination, the use of violence.
El uso de la violencia en Cataluña.
And now that is Thomas Amta there reporting. We bring you back to the African continent. This time around, we take you to Sierra Leone. Authorities in the country are reinforcing their position that pregnant girls cannot attend school prior to giving birth. According to a controversial government policy, pregnant girls can now sit in exams, but they cannot attend school, Isaac.
The government says allowing pregnant girls to attend regular schools would tear them out, expose them to ridicule, and encourage others to get pregnant. It has created part-time centers where they can study. Well, before we came on air, I spoke to our own correspondent in the capital, Claudia Anthony, on this story, and this is what she told me.
This scheme that the government is talking about that they created to get these pregnant girls attending classes, not in school, they use that scheme to get up to about 10,000 who expressed later desire to return back to school, and the assistant was about 10,000 or so to get back to school. So that's what the government is saying, that they should not share the same classes with those that are not pregnant because they would influence those who aren't pregnant.
Well, but many observers, including rights groups like Amnesty International, think that it is a discriminatory policy instead of empowering these girls.
That's the general feeling here amongst a lot of the non-governmental organizations, community-based organizations. They say it's still a discrimination that the girls must not go to school. They are advocating for the girls to go to school just like the others.
Now, Sierra Leone is a country with high rates of teenage pregnancy. Do you think concerned civil society groups, let's leave alone the government out of this, have done enough at least to create, you know, centers where sex education can be taught to teenagers?
I think I would say they are working on it. Very recently, a lot of campaign has gone on the way that deals with sex education and all that kind of stuff. It was almost like a taboo to deal with those issues. But now that this teenage pregnancy has become a menace in the country over the past decade or so, dozens of these non-civil society groups are working on that, trying to bring teenage girls together, even teenage boys, to teach them about sex education, about knowing their bodies, about what to do when they feel threatened. Some of these girls don't get pregnant because they want to get pregnant. Some are raped by people who they trust, people who they live with at home many a time. It's a family, it's a neighbor, it's a friend of the family.
Well, you heard our correspondent Claudia Anthony dissecting that story, that controversial issue in Sierra Leone. And Mimi, we have some comments here.
Certainly, a lot of comments. And I can see this from Kobong Badali, who says that my question is the boy that impregnated her, would he also be banned from going to school? Let's say that no discrimination against a girl child in education.
That's a question, you know, many people are always wondering. When a girl is raped or defiled, most of the consequences, you know, go to her rather than the boy also in question. Now, we have Nolan Kabwe who says, let the government find another way to resolve that issue of pregnant girls than ban them from attending school lessons.
Yeah, and also Ku Ben Bia says that in Liberia, pregnant school-going girls are allowed in school.
Well, in Tanzania, one quick one, it says the ban involved government schools only. There is still a chance for attending private schools. Many thanks for those comments. Keep it up at DW Africa.
You are listening to Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. Stay with us for more stories across the continent and beyond. I am Mimi Mifo.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe. You can also be part of today's program, like my colleague Mimi says, by joining the debate on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
That's it. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, police in Nigeria's state of Katsina uncover another torture house hosting hundreds of children. Victims tell us how life has been in what the people who held them call Transformation Center.
They insult you. They maltreat you. We are suffering. Our parents brought us here for rehabilitation, but it is not reformation. It is something else.
Well, we also hear how sex education can curb birth rates among underage girls in Africa.
But first, let's talk fashion on the continent. In recent years, Western luxury brands have come under fire for stealing African designs. Do you know that, Isaac?
Well, I've seen so many complaints in magazines and newspapers, you know.
Now, in this setting, many young designers, Africa's fashion hubs, have decided to reappropriate and modernize their heritage.
And that's why a young Kenyan designer, Katush, is pushing back against this trend while she hopes to make a big splash at the Paris Fashion Week. This report by Meren Kira Dabal is now presented by Shola Jayesimi.
Appropriation of Africa's fashion has in recent times become the focus of Katush. The young Kenyan designer says it is frustrating when the international fashion market copies fashion traditions and aesthetics from Africa. For her, referencing is crucial.
When I see cultural misappropriation in fashion, it's pretty frustrating. It can't be that simple to just take something, exhibit it, and feel no shame about the fact that you've basically ripped it off somebody.
Katush says from a tender age, she's been fascinated by textiles. The young designer says at 8, she knew she wanted to be a designer after she created her first look from the evening dress her mother wore the day she was married.
It was the prettiest thing I'd ever seen, and I thought, even me, I want to wear it. So I took it out of the cupboard, chopped it up, stapled it together, used sellotape, masking tape, anything I could find, and made it fit me. Little to say that I got into very big trouble.
Now in her early 30s, the designer is making a name with her creativity and is about to take her latest collection to catwalks and international showrooms. First up, and for the first time in her life, is the Paris Fashion Week.
I know this opportunity doesn't come easy and it's not something that everyone gets. So I'm like, I hope I do a good enough job. At the same time, I'm excited. My work must have said something to someone. So it's all those things all at the same time.
In our current collection, Katush wants to explore how transitioning into adulthood feels for her generation by channeling inspiration from the Potok community who live in northern Kenya. Katush says her life and career are also at a transitional point. She hopes the designs she takes to Paris will help her break into the international fashion market.
A report by Melanie Kira Dabal, presented by Shola Jayesemi, our colleague right now at Africa Link. Now, Mimi, what do you think of, people stealing other people's styles or fashion trends or even, designs, or call them
I think that the Kenyan designer, she has a point. There is no problem. I wouldn't say stealing, but I should say you have to at least give credit to the original proprietor of the design, which is normal and legal.
And if you don't get authorization, what should we call that?
That is theft, of course.
That is theft, you know. That is theft of someone's theft. Intellectual property. Right. I thought so. Anyway.
U-Zone.
Every day in developing countries, 20,000 underage girls give birth. That translates to 7 million children being born every year. And these births also mark a disruption in the education of school-going girls.
To halt this worrying trend, the UN Population Fund is trying to promote sexual and reproductive health education across the continent. But many families are suspicious of these sex education trainings. In our youth program this week, 77%, Michael Oti has been finding out more about this subject.
Africa's population is expected to reach 2.5 billion by 2050. This population boom has been seen by many as a threat to proper resource allocation. Earlier this month, a government proposal to promote sex education among pupils in Ghana was widely rejected by parents and the public. On DW's Youth Magazine show, The 77%, I asked two DW journalists, Abubakar Ajalo and Samu Injama, what they thought about teaching children their sexual and reproductive health. The debate was heated.
You need to start teaching the child about sex. That moment that child is start asking questions.
You don't teach children these things. If you start teaching children these things, they'll start being curious and cautious, want to know what happens exactly. You're telling a child that this is where you have your boobs, this is where you have these other parts of the part. And then now they're becoming curious. Wait until maybe they are fully grown, then now you can start talking to them.
Let me ask you a question on this. What are the dangers of telling a child about this is the vagina, this is the penis?
Danger is that they'll start to explore at an early age.
Ghana is not the only country where the business of sex education for children is tricky. In Nigeria and Zambia, for instance, some parents tell DW teaching children about sex should be left to them.
Parents talk to children first, because we have a whole generation of people who haven't been sat down and who are contracting STIs and whatnot because they're not educated.
If they say they are feeling shy, somebody is there outside waiting to teach the children. And be careful, if they teach such children outside, they may practicalize it.
Research, however, shows that children get information about sex, their bodies, and their rights from friends or the internet. Children who are online can also access pornography. That is why Dr. Tinashe Goronga, a health equity advocate from Zimbabwe, thinks the conversation must start early and in the proper environment.
When it comes to a lot of controversial issues and taboo topics, there are a lot of alarmists who make uninformed arguments without taking time to actually read the document, or sometimes they take parts of the document and they interpret them out of context. And most of it comes from the fear, so they end up projecting a lot of these arguments.
Sex education for children, despite years of sensitization, still remains a difficult subject for many in Africa. Personal values, it would appear, often influence how people approach the subject.
That was Michael Oti reporting.
Speaking out.
Now, police in Katsina State, northern Nigeria, have launched investigation into alleged torture and abuse of students at an Islamic Reformation Center in Daura, the hometown of President Muhammadu Buhari. On Monday, Nigerian police uncovered the Reformation Center where more than 300 students are said to have been tortured and abused.
Now, President Muhammadu Buhari condemned the act and urged the police to search for similar houses and free those he says were illegally detained in the Reformation Centers. From northern Nigeria, our reporter Zaharuddin Omar reports.
It is an unusual day at the so-called Reformation Center in Daura, Katsina State of northern Nigeria, where hundreds of kids have been caged for several months. The facility, according to its owners, is said to be rehabilitating drug addicts and other deviants in society. But Fahad Jibrila, a student who has been here for 2 years, tells me about his ordeal.
They insult you, they maltreat you, and they sexually abuse people which seriously contravene the tenets of Islam. We are suffering. Our parents brought us here for rehabilitation, but it is not reformation. It is something else.
Another student who spoke on condition of anonymity was brought from neighboring Niger Republic because he was said to be stealing from his parent. He says at least 40 students share a single room at the center.
They serve us with a single food 3 times a day. They don't balance the diet. If your father sends you 20,000 naira, you will keep it with them, and when you want to use it, they will frown at you and insult you.
The Reformation Center is called Makaranta Malam Bellemi Al-Majri, meaning the School of Bellemi Al-Majri. It was supposed to be a rehabilitation center and conventional Islamic school, locally referred to as Tsangaya School. But according to Sanusi Buba, police commissioner of Katsina State, it is an illegal detention center.
These students have suffered all sorts of torture. They are not mad. We were even told that some of them have gone mad as a result of injustice meted out to them. Look at their toilet. Look at their rooms. More than 300 persons are sharing 6 rooms. So with this, we will not allow the founder to continue to operate the school. Reformation cannot take place under this inhumane condition.
Sheikh Umar Hashim, an Islamic scholar in Kaduna, says the school is not a reflection of Islamic way of teaching and rehabilitation.
Islam has strongly frowned at homosexuality. It's what people of Lot did, which God destroyed them with a colossal natural disaster. So this is not Islamic, and when it comes to rehabilitation under Islamic teachings, there's nothing like beating a child. It's just caution and warnings.
By the time police arrived at the Reformation Center in Daura, more than 200 students had managed to escape. The latest discovery of mass abuse comes less than 3 weeks after police uncovered a similar reformation center in neighboring state of Kaduna, where students were allegedly tortured and sexually abused. Police authorities say they will continue to expose and follow up on the prosecution of such schools, which exist in predominantly Muslim northern Nigeria.
DW's Zahra Din Umar, they're reporting, Isaac, on this story that has left many in shock. My question is to the leaders there in Nigeria. How did we get here, Isaac?
Yeah, exactly. Good question there. And many people are wondering the same on social media platforms. What's going on, you know, how these children found themselves in these so-called reformation centers where many parents thought they're going to be taught religion, you know, values of society that would shape them into the people they should be in the future. But all they got there was torture and rape. And most of these centers, you know, they are like, they work clandestinely, as far as what I've gathered on Twitter and other social media platforms.
And parents, too, are where their kids are there.
Exactly.
So many have been there for more than €1, €2, and we are still counting.
And the most unfortunate part of it is that all this is in the name of religion.
Yeah,
you know?
Certainly, yeah.
Well, our correspondents there are still up and about following this story to see, get in touch with the leaders to see whether there are other centers, just like President Muhammadu Buhari said, they should comb the areas to see whether there are more. And this story, we shall always bring it to you whenever other new centers are found. Let's take you back to one of the stories that we've been covering about Sierra Leone's government reinforcing a ban on pregnant girls attending school. The government says they should not attend classes, but they can do exams in separate rooms.
And so many of you, you are acted on our social media platforms, according to Lily Fokum, who pregnant teachers too don't go to school, according to her. That's what she says.
Someone responding to one of the commentators, Kobong Badali, and her name is Rebecca Bonaventil, says, I wish our leaders thought before they acted. Unfortunately, discrimination and abuse towards women and girls remains rife in Africa. It is quite sad. And we might think education for all is the best way to go. What do you think?
Well, it's the best way to go, but we have school norms that must be respected.
Mm-hmm.
If the teachers or the government should put in place policies and to discourage young girls from getting pregnant at
this by promoting
stage.
Sex education, of course,
certainly.
It's okay. But of course, not discriminating them away from other colleagues in class.
Yeah, certainly. But they should give us strong points to back that up, certainly.
Mimi's points there. We come to the end. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Mimi Vimefu.
DW. Made for Mind.